I'm Jason. Again, Kevin, really an honor to connect and to be with you during this hour. But really quick, what Kevin and I mentioned, it would be super helpful to hear really quick, like, why you came in here. For me, if I had to choose all the breakouts, like, I like business. I like this side of it, this conversation. But, like, there's a reason you came in here, and there's a reason this topic interested you. And I would love for you to fire away why. Like, 2 minutes. Not almost every person in the room, but maybe every person in the room. Like, fire away really quick. Why did you choose this session? Like, you signed up. You came to, after that, with Michael Crawford, an anointed man. When I meet with Michael, and I've known him for a while, and he's such a good friend of mine, I'm like, this man's anointed. He's just anointed. And right after an anointed session where we're meeting with Jesus, you came to the business side of church planting. I'm like, this is terrible. I don't even want to go. I want to be with Chip Dodd next door. But why did you come? Really quick, just fire away. We'd love to hear from you. That's going to set a little context for where we go in these 11 things that we're going to share with you today. So fire away. Why did you come? Business. What about this topic interested you? George told you to come. All right, George, why did you come? Oh, okay, because he knew my name. All right. Huh? I thought there'd be food. You thought there'd be food. This is not going in the right direction, guys. No, I'm just kidding. You're my boss. Okay. Kevin, this is going well. All right, good.
So it had a name, church planting, and we're called to go out there. We're called to reach, and the way to do that is to plant churches. So I want to make sure that I know what I can about planting churches.
Okay. All right, what else? Fire away.
This is the opposite of my personality.
Okay. That's what we were curious on. Okay, that's good. That's good. Opposite, because you know you need it. Carly and Will just mentioned that. You know, it's like, who's going to come? Some people know they need it, so.
The world vision, and say, you know, business making profit. So, you know, maximize the profit.
That's good. That's good to know.
My degree is in business, and I have divorced it for too long.
Okay. Good. Interesting. That's good. What else? Keep coming. It's expensive. Yeah.
First time, I don't get a lot of second chances.
It's really good. Excellent. Very good.
Yeah, this is my second month to do this business planting, so I want to learn more.
Okay. Excellent. Very good. What else?
It sounds like a practical aspect of
church. Okay, good. Sounds like the practical. Very good.
Starting a business.
Starting businesses? Yeah, is that what you said? Starting? Okay, excellent. Very good. What else? One or two more? All right, what we're going to do is we're going to share 11 different items, 11 different things, right? Now, in some ways, I do believe these 11 are so, so critical, but we're going to bounce back and forth, Kevin and I. There's going to be like, you know, 3 to 4 minutes on each one, so we're going to fire really quick, and we're going to try to hit two sides of each one, both the vision component and the execution side of it. And so in some ways, it's going to feel like, you know, when you see a blank canvas and you grab the colors and you just throw it up on the wall, we're going to throw up a lot of different things like on the canvas, super fast, super quick. And we are going to get a 5 minute or a 10 minute warning. 10 minute, JD? All right. There we go. Good. All right. Look, so we're going to read these steps to you, and we're both going to share, and we're going to hit two different sides, and we're going to ping pong back and forth. Okay. The first one, the business side of planting, is this: hire. Listen to this. This is one of the biggest challenges. Hire and or recruit people that are the best at what they do, the best, and get out of the way. Okay. Hire and or recruit people that are the best at what they do and get out of the way. I think the one of the number one challenges that you have as a leader is to find people that are highly, highly skilled. Now, I know we believe in developing. We believe in casting vision. We believe in raising up leaders. But sometimes I think the biggest challenge is that we're trying to bring someone along that's not gifted. The biggest challenge in the organizational development is finding really, really skilled leaders and really finding them and empowering them and just getting out of their way. Quick example, I had a guy in my church that managed and he did the audit for the Massachusetts State Insurance and Healthcare. His team literally audited billions of dollars every year. And so I said, hey, can you do me a favor? Can you generate 2 reports for me and give me feedback on these 3 things every single week? He's like, yes. It was the most valuable asset at Encounter Church that could speak into the business side. Why? Because, by the way, I didn't hire him. All I said was, hey, listen, you audit how much? Okay, can you help me at Encounter Church because you love the Lord, right? So it's like finding the best people. No one is better than Mike Beatty. In fact, whenever Trump was voted in as president, right, and elected, Washington, D.C. made a phone call to EY in Boston and said, who's the very best tax advisor and insurance advisor you got? Now, his name's Mike Beatty. Well, we're going to hire him to fly to Washington and give us advice on all this tax stuff we're doing. So I said, hey, Mike, will you help Encounter Church? It's finding the best people and really helping them by getting out of the way.
Yeah. Team is everything, right? So what's interesting about our dynamic is he's kind of the more administrator guy. I'm more the visionary guy. When I was pointing at you, this is so outside my comfort zone, right? But team is everything. So you need to make sure that when you're hiring people and they're going where they need to go, that you're trusting them enough to get it done, right? Don't micromanage. That's huge. You're going to have to let them fail at some point, right? So trust that the Holy Spirit's giving you the right person. The only other thing I'm going to say on this specific topic, if you see somebody that you know would be good on your team, approach them. Like, I don't care if they're already doing something else, right? My entire team, so a little bit about me. So we have opened 5 nonprofit coffee houses in downtown Boston and then planted churches alongside of those. What I've done as far as building team is I see somebody and I go, man, I really like what you're doing. And I know that you already have a job and I know that somebody, you're already on somebody else's team, but I want you, right? Go after the individuals that you think are going to help you on your team. Don't hesitate. You never know what the Holy Spirit's going to do, right? There's been moments where I'm like, there's no way they're going to come work for me. And they're like, man, I've been waiting for this type of opportunity. So seek out who you want and then don't micromanage them, right?
The last thing I would say on the hiring, and this is going to see a little bit of my administrative organizational side. I actually wrote kind of a hiring process and organizational handbook, and that was fun to me, right? To some of you, like, that's terrible. That's the definition of a bad, bad, bad job. Someone that were like doing that. And I always say this on hiring and making sure you get the right people. If you don't have a hiring process, you're really setting up your ministry for a lot of danger. And I say hiring process, I mean step-by-step hiring process. And I remember I thought what I did was pretty good. And then a month on the job, I remember someone at Taylor's First Baptist came up to me and said, hey, when are our vacation days? How much vacation do I get? I know we've all done that, right? We've all brought people on board and we've not had it written down. So that really leads to something on number 2. If it is not written down and understood by all, it will cause you problems. Okay, if it's not written down, and I don't mean a good vision, I don't mean a good sermon series. What I'm saying is if you want to be organized, and part of the business side, some people hear this topic and say, I don't want to, the church isn't a business, and they go real spiritual. Well, the church has so much business aspect that's absolutely required. Moses had an organizational problem, and his father-in-law spoke into it. Do you remember that one? This is a organization. Call it what you want. Call it business. Call it organization. But there is an organizational development problem that Moses had because he shouldered too much. And so we really could talk about this one for a super long time. If this isn't written down and understood by all, it's going to cause you problems. There's a moment when something, an accusation is going to be made. This could get you into a lot of trouble. I remember in the early days of church planting, I would call churches that I loved and respected. Hey, can you tell me more about your hiring process? And they would talk for a little bit. Can you send that to me? The answer is no, right? Because things aren't written down.
Yeah, from the vision standpoint, there are 2 kind of major issues here that I have failed in, right? So first, my wife has never come to me and said, Kevin, you're over-communicating. Ever. I'm dying for that day because I think I'm over-communicating, but then she'll come and say, I didn't really grasp what you just said. You cannot over-communicate. right? So you want to make sure that you're communicating constantly, whatever the expectation is. Make sure that it's, like he said, written down. And then here's the second part. If you're a church planter in here, okay, we're going to get real. There's some arrogance in us, all right? Like, I know Justin's like, there's no arrogance in me. Listen, I'm an arrogant man, okay? And I work hard to be humble by his grace. One of the things about this is oftentimes we will write stuff down or set expectations, and then we become the exception to those expectations. And when we do that, it ends up taking everything that we've said, and it either puts us in this category of arrogance in front of everyone, or it derails everything that we're trying to do. The goal of writing stuff down and communicating isn't so that we're holding people accountable to things that we're not willing to do, right? So we have to example this. For somebody like me, who I'm not great at writing things down, so I have other people do that, but then they have to come and remind me at times, hey, don't be the exception to this, because what you're modeling isn't holding to what you're saying.
Now, I struggle to go on to number three because I have so much to say on number two, but I would just challenge you, depending on what seat you sit in, depending on your role in the local church, some of you would love to write things down. You love to articulate. Some of you are like, I just love to talk about it. That is okay. I am gifted in seeing detail and thinking through detail. And some other pastors, the lead pastor at Encounter Church, where I served for about 9 years, he loved that I would ask him a million questions about what he just shared so eloquently. Hey, can you tell me more about that? You have that written down? Can you send that to me? If not, don't worry. I can write it down. Is this good? What do you want to change? All right. Have you told this person? No. Find the people like me and get out of the way. Right? Let them do it. Okay. Number three is this. Yeah, please.
Okay. Sorry. One more. So I told you we have these coffee houses, right? Well, we've gotten to a point where when I walk into one of our coffee houses, there are employees there that have no idea who I am. Right? And that's what I want. Like, that's what we're supposed to do. But there's also this arrogance in me at times where I'm walking to the register and I want my coffee and then they charge me for it. Do you feel the tension? So what I've had to do is get myself into a position to say, this person doesn't know who I am, and that's okay. And they have been given a job to do that I'm not going to supersede. So are there moments when I'll walk into our own coffee house and pay for my coffee? I just want to throw that out there, because I think oftentimes as planters, that would almost offend us. You know, it's that, do you know who I am? I'm the one cutting your check, right? Okay.
That's good. All right, number three is this. If you do not know your numbers, then you don't know your business. I'll translate that a little bit, all right? If you don't know your numbers, you don't know your business. This comes from a quote. He was a youth pastor for a long time. He left being a youth pastor, started flipping houses, and now he leads the number one real estate podcast on the planet. It's called Bigger Pockets. A guy named Brandon Turner, who's the CEO for a while of Bigger Pockets and now owns thousands and thousands of units. He loves the Lord, loves giving back to the mission of God, and super. He loves church planters, by the way, okay? No, I don't know him personally. I can't introduce you to him. But this is what he says about this, and it's so true, I believe, of young entrepreneurs and young church planters. If you don't know your numbers, right, whatever numbers are important to the health of your ministry and your organization, then you don't know your business. Here's what he means. If you can't articulate the numbers, you don't understand what's going on. The rough and the challenge of this is that not every lead pastor needs to understand the analytics and the finances. Not every lead pastor needs to be in finance. Not every lead pastor needs to be able to articulate like what Mike Beatty could articulate to me, the guy I mentioned earlier, like what I could articulate to our lead pastor. But someone in your ministry has to wake up thinking in spreadsheets. Someone has to go to sleep thinking about spreadsheets. And if you struggle to articulate your numbers, then you don't understand what's going on. There's a tension here that's going to lead to number four. But before I go to number four, I'll say this. It just makes sense. Let's combine three and four. Number four is this. Numbers don't say everything, but they always say something. Okay? To put so much stock into it you could be a fool. But to ignore it, you could be a fool. There's got to be some tension in this. And I could raise up a lot of examples, right, from either baptism, things that really matter, right, to attendance, to understanding cash flow, gap, margin, right? But to not understand it is a shame. And someone has to understand it. And I've been around some really, really gifted people. The former CEO of the SPC was Frank Page. His right-hand guy was a guy named Larry Bateman. Larry Bateman discipled me when I was in my 20s at good old Taylor's FPC, Carly Kugel. Larry Bateman opened and closed Gerber, right? Pretty big baby company around the planet, right? He was so gifted, and he created this tension really, really well. They numbers don't say everything, but they say something. And to not understand them, and that puts a lot of weight on some of you in here because you don't like it, that's totally okay. But you got to find someone that's really, really good at it and really gifted at it. So balance that tension.
Yeah, so if you're more on the visionary side like me, every time somebody says numbers, you go to sleep, right? Frankly, I hate it. I hate business meetings. I hate sitting down and listening to what's going on with numbers, all right? I think for me, where the shift came in, I'm just going to tell you, I still hate it. But I know it's important, right? There's a book in the Bible called Numbers, right? So we say, okay, somehow this is important. Listen to those who care about numbers. I think that's probably the best advice I'm going to give you. If you're visionary, listen to those who care about numbers. If you're not an individual who cares about numbers, then the reality is they're going to be telling you truths about what's going on in your organization, and they're trying to protect you. And oftentimes, we don't want to deal with those little details that are going on, but I have learned flat out that, especially as a businessman, so set pastor aside for a moment, typically, businesses fail because they're not listening to what the numbers are telling them, okay? That's most of the time. Second, I would say to see numbers as an opportunity to help you understand if the vision's actually happening. So, example, so if you say coffee house, you know, we have these coffee houses, but ultimately the point is that we want to have conversations with people, right, that we hope lead to gospel conversations. So over time, we're building these relationships. Well, I'm caring about how many conversations we're having. That's a number I care about. Somebody comes, it's usually one. Somebody comes and says, man, I had this really great conversation. And here it was. Those numbers matter to me. But the numbers that I haven't been paying attention to are how many sales, how much coffee are we actually selling? Right? Well, if my vision is the ministry component and then I'm looking at just the numbers on the financial end, it's not correlating, right? So make sure that the numbers that you're focused on are actually solidifying or showing that the vision's actually happening. So for example, if we're just saying, hey, the vision is ministry, but we're the numbers are just showing we're doing great sales, but we're not doing anything on the mission end, then your vision isn't actually coming to fruition. Does that make sense? So you can use the numbers to verify that the mission's actually occurring, right? Don't become a slave to the numbers. I think that's important. I mean, these guys, that's their job, right? They're looking at that. But as a visionary, don't become a slave to the numbers. Numbers have to follow the vision. So, I mean... numbers are important. Make sure you know them. Make sure you have the right people in play. Make sure that what they're telling you is solidifying that the vision's moving forward. And if it's not, make a change. Okay?
It's good. That's simple. Yeah. Would you like to start us off on number five?
All right. So next, organization brings order. The lack of organization brings chaos. Okay, so JD mentioned this at the beginning. You guys have probably read the book or at least heard of it, like The Trellis and the Vine, right? So does everybody know what I'm talking about? No. Okay, so the vine grows, but as it gets to a certain point, we have to build a bigger trellis to support the vine's growth, right? So that's what organization is. Organization are the systems that we put in play so that the ministry can flourish. I am not a systems guy. I'm far from it. Okay? So, I mean, he'll talk about it from why this needs to occur, but from a, as a visionary guy, I would say value the systems. Find yourself a good systems guy. Okay? So I'm not good at this. So if you say, I can tell you where the where our church or where our organization needs to be a year from now. I can cast the picture. I can say, this is where we're supposed to be. I can even give you like the large steps that we need to take to get there. But those small steps, those half steps, I have no clue. And so it's okay to own that. It's okay to say, you know what, I this isn't my thing. I'm going to have to find somebody who can develop the systems to make sure that my the steps that I'm introducing, you know, well, what's the next step, right? Okay, there's a half step here that's going to have to take place before we get to this larger step. Listen to those people.
One of the biggest things I could really recommend for you to do on a practical side is organize your meetings and give people space in those meetings to facilitate and lead the ones that have detail. Give those people space. Give those people time to be a part, to be a voice, and to ask questions. When we planted Encounter Church, I remember one of our early team members, I was getting to know him super well. His name's Chad Rowland. I said, Chad, tell me about your job. And he was on the planning team for a federal contract that managed the Alaskan pipeline, right? So I'm like, oh, tell me about that. He goes, I made sure engineers did their jobs right, and I tried to save them money. And so I said, well, tell me, what did that look like? And he said, well, I looked at a $300 million plan in the Alaskan pipeline, and they said, can you save 10%? I said, yeah, I can make this project $270 million. I'm like, time out, stop. Can you help me at Encounter Church make sure that we're ready for our first service? He's like, I can do that. So I want you to sit in every meeting. I'm going to give you 15 minutes at the end of each meeting to ask questions. And I'm telling you what, we move further faster because Chad Rowland gave us 15 minutes and he listened, right? I'm telling you what, the dude is a genius. And when we set up Encounter Church, hey, man, we're going to be meeting in a middle school. We have this design. And he said, how much do you think you want to spend? I said, no more than $100,000. He said, can I do a better job than that $100,000 plan and make it $70,000? I'm like, please. Because that's what he did for $300 million projects. It's getting him in the room and leveraging. The other one is a story about a girl named Kelly Whiffen. I would say because we hired a Kelly Whiffen at Encounter Church, and she was a full-time employee. Chad was a volunteer. So I said, Kelly, when you sit in every meeting, I'm going to give you one-third of every meeting that you're sitting in. The reason I'm going to give you one-third of every meeting you're sitting in is because you see more questions and understand more questions about detail than anyone else in the room. And so she would say at the end of the meeting, she would say, hey, Kevin, I love that vision. I love that idea. When do you want that done by? Kevin is fine with not giving a deadline. Kelly is driving. She's like, you know, it's like chalk fingers on chalkboards because Kevin didn't tell her when. So she was like, Kevin, I love that. Can you tell us when do you want that done by? Okay, great. Jason, is it your job or your responsibility to make sure that we make sure that the elders have all the everything that they need by Friday? Okay, great. She would just start. She was the captain. I called her Captain Kelly. She's a full-time administrative assistant with Encounter Church. So I don't know what that looks like, but what I'm saying is there are people inside your church that are so highly, highly gifted at running effective organizations, highly gifted. And it would be wise of you from a volunteer standpoint, that's why I give those two examples, and or from a full-time staff perspective to leverage their unique gifts so that you can be organized, so that you can run effectively and efficiently. Chad drove some people crazy on our staff because, you know, I don't know about you, there's probably half of you in this room, and people ask you too many questions, insecurity goes up because you're like, I'm not good enough. I didn't communicate well enough. Others of you are like, thank you. Got any more questions? Right? You give them permission to drive, to ask questions, to really make sure you do everything you can to run the effective organization. Okay, number six.
All right. Yeah, number six. So this one rocked me, to be honest. So I've heard this formula before where they say income minus expense equals your profit. And you turn this upside down for me. So I've actually been processing this one for a while. So what we want to tell you is income minus expense equals margin. And that's a whole different philosophy, all right? Equals margin. Now, we need margin in every aspect of our lives, of our ministry, of our business, okay? When you become a slave to the work, it's very difficult to build relationships, right? You're exhausted, you're tired. What we're trying to do is build in margin. So what I think hit me so hard, and I don't have no idea what you're going to talk about this with this, I have learned that everything costs more than you think it's going to cost. Everything, right? I told you this earlier, but people will come and say, hey, I want to start a business. I like your model. I want to do this. What does this look like? How much is it going to cost? They always want like a hard number. And I typically will give them a number that's about $200,000 more than I think it should be. Okay? And the reason is because here's a stat for you. 95% of business startups in the United States fail because they don't have the operating capital to make it. And 95% of failed businesses, okay? Now, I would say that's probably accurate even in church planting world. We cast this vision. We have this desire to see this huge growth. We think we have a great idea. We might even get the initial money that we need to launch the business, launch the church, whatever it is. But if we don't have enough operating capital from a business standpoint to sustain a year at minimum with having sold nothing, then we're probably not going to make it, okay? Everything is more expensive than you think it should be, and everything takes longer than you think it will. We see all of the time, we'll hear these either churches or whatever, and you go, man, this church is huge. And you'll hear the story about, oh, I planted and 500 people showed up right away. That's really rare in a city, right? Especially in a city like Boston, 500 would be a mega church for us. So what we have to understand is that it's going to take longer, but we have to build in this margin so that we don't become a slave to the finances, okay?
That's good. Yeah, good. So the income, I want to ask you a question. How many of you in your ministries would say that you have financial struggle at this point, or there's financial weight, or there's financial challenges? Just raise your hand. Financial struggles, financial whatever, fill in the blank. All right. Yeah. Yeah, I was going to, everyone should be. Come on. I thought everyone, yeah, okay, yeah. So, yeah, that's right. So here's the question I have for you. Do you have an income problem? Or do you have an expense problem? Or do you have a margin problem? Now, you can always say all three, but it's rarely all three. Right? It's one or the other. Now, you probably can say, well, you know, we do need more money coming in. Our expenses are too high, and we don't effectively use our margin. But most people would never say all three. When I sat down with Mike Beatty and I handed him the books, because he can look at a local church's books pretty quickly and pretty assessed, he goes, do you have an income problem or do you have an expense problem? So I think it's an expense problem. He goes, nope. All of these expenses are very reasonable. You have an income problem. Right? And so he goes, a lot of your energy, Jason, you've all asked expense questions. You don't have an expense problem. Stop asking expense questions. You need to figure out how to get the money up. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. It was just helpful coming from a guy that's looking at millions and millions of dollars. He goes, most people's energy are spent on expenses. And by the way, I'm a Dave Ramsey fan, so is Mike Beatty, but we kind of hit on Dave Ramsey. He goes, you know, some of his stuff is like all about getting your coffee expense down. That's not the real problem. It's a self-control problem, right? From a spiritual standpoint. So I got the Send Boston residence a couple years ago, and we went to the EY building, and I said, I'm going to put you in front of Mike Beatty for an hour. I'm just going to let him go. You know what he did for 1 hour? They had 1 hour with this guy. You know what he talked about? Your personal spending. And I was like, he never got past personal spending. Your personal spending from a stewardship. I'm like, he never went to spreadsheets. He never went to management. He never went to skill finding. He said, listen, if you steward what God has given you well, you'll have eyes to do it for the Lord. You'll have eyes to do it in the church. And so when he said, the other thing is income versus expense does equal your margin, but you really need to study well. What's my problem? I think all of our expenses are manageable. Then let's put all of our energy on the income. That's different in business, obviously, than it is the income of the local church, but there's some parallels. All right. I think you should also start off number 7.
Yeah. So this is the one I could talk about for days. Hold tight to the vision, but loose to the methods by which the Lord will see it to fruition. Okay, now this sounds almost contradictory. Every person in here at some point has been given a vision for the Lord. So that could be for a business, for a ministry, for a church, plant, whatever it is. And you know what that vision is. You can see it, you picture it, you know what the end result should look like. It's all there, right? It's never going to happen the way that you think it's going to happen. And as a visionary, we have to be okay with that, okay? So coffee houses, like we had this vision of coming into Boston, opening coffee houses. If you know anything about Boston, you know it's extremely expensive to plant in the city. Space is expensive. One of the spaces that we rent is supposed to rent for $54,000 a month, okay? So just so you get an understanding. So how does a church plant survive? So one of the reasons that we open coffee houses is so that the coffee house could pay for a church to meet, right? So the church comes in and has basically no rent. So the coffee houses are open Monday through Saturday, and then it's closed on Sunday, and the church uses the space. That was the vision. The church planted before we got our first coffee house open, and we were just meeting in a space that we had found as a nonprofit space and paying a fortune to do it. Then our first coffee house ended up opening inside of a train station, and it was a 90 square foot kiosk. It looked nothing like we planned on doing. Over time, long story short, the kiosk, within the first 3 months, the Lord, by his grace, allowed us to be the number one coffee house in Boston. 90 square feet, okay, at a train station. Couldn't control the environment, can't meet there as a church. That specific location led to the opening of the second one because the landlord at the second one came by and said, "We love your coffee. Would you mind putting a space in here?" And that looked different. Then that one led to the next one. It was the fourth one that we opened that was finally large enough for us to actually be able, and that was 10 years later. All right? Now, looking back, I would say, "Lord, this isn't what I planned. Like, this isn't the vision." He just kept saying, "Hold on to the vision. It's coming, it's coming, it's coming." Because of the methods that he used to do it, that put us in front of people that we would never have been put in front of before, right? So now the city itself is looking at the Well Coffee House. So like New York, Boston was shut down for COVID. We were one of the only businesses in Boston that the mayor actually approached and said, "Would you mind staying open if I consider you essential?" Well, why would we do that? Because we like what you do. We don't necessarily like what you believe, but we like what you're doing. That only came about because we started with this tiny kiosk in a train station. Hold tight to the vision. Hold loose to the method by which the Lord will see it to fruition.
Practically one of the best books I've read. We're trying to sort of like a grandfather clock TikTok. We're trying to hit a little bit of vision and the execution side. And so this is why it kind of feels it's like it's bouncing back and forth. One of the best books on execution of vision that I've ever read was Rocket Fuel. And it really kind of creates this tension between vision and execution. And I love that tension in execution because I also am keenly aware that futuristic thinkers are so futuristic that I honestly don't think in today, right? Some of the most aloof people in the room, it's not because they're not present today, it's that they're dreaming for tomorrow more. And so Rocket Fuel creates this tension, this book of, all right, have this great grand vision. What does that mean today, right? And sometimes visionaries can't actually answer that question. They can't. They can't answer the question. So when I hear a leader say, "Hold loose to the method," great. So are you okay if I do whatever it takes as long as this is the end goal? Yes. And there are certain leaders that go, no. Here's exactly what I want. Okay, that sounds good, but I need that written down. If you don't want my words on it, then you need to write it down. So this is Chris Causey. I'd say, hey, go ahead.
Not only will it be okay, but I'm going to say please.
Yeah, that's right. And I've worked with leaders in the past, and I would say, "Hey, Chris, is this what you want?" He'd say, "Nope." I said, "Well, I need you to write that down because I don't know what you're talking about." Other things he would say, "Nope, here's what I want." Great. So execution, vision will die because of a lack of execution. Doesn't matter how good it sounds. It doesn't matter how anointed it is, right? The vision will die because of a lack of execution. And here's what I want to kind of pull this pressure off of you. and this will, I want to pull this pressure off of you. Some of you are not very good at executing. Can I just pull that pressure off of you? And I say, I just want to say this. You don't have to be. But you are responsible for making sure it does get executed. You're responsible, right? So what does that look like? It looks like finding organizational thinkers and saying, ask me hard questions. It looks like finding detailed people and not just asking them for their feedback. It's inviting them to the room, right? To help lead the room. I kept telling Kelly Whiffen, I said, I don't want you to give feedback. I want you to lead. I'm not a leader. Huh? It's okay. You're not a leader how you see that you think you should be a leader. I want you to lead. I want you to find and expose the issues in the room so that the vision doesn't die. Right? Moses was given a vision by God, but there was so much weight on him. Father-in-law comes in town and says, bro, you got to reorganize this thing. What are you doing? There's too much on you. So invite those that execute to the room. Invite them to the table and say, help us run this. Help us be effective. Help us be efficient, right? And it's not going to be just asking their feedback after a meeting. It's going to be helping them, inviting them to help lead the meeting.
One more thing on this one. I want to speak to the administrators in the room real quick, because if that's you and you're working for a visionary, the worst thing that you can do is constantly tell the visionary what they can't do. Okay? Like, you will frustrate them to the nth degree, and they're not going to listen to you anymore. So typically, when I'm working with an administrator, I don't want to hear all the details, and I don't want to know what I can't do. Just tell me what I can do. I don't need to know the rest. Just give me the ability to do what you're saying I can do. Does that make sense? Don't frustrate your visionary by holding them hostage, right? Like, let them also do what only they can do. But don't, every time as an administrator you walk into their office or you're going to have a lunch or a conversation with them, if it's always about things they can't do, this relationship's not going to last very long.
So we've sort of bridged that to number 8, which was that vision drives 10 minutes. Good, thank you. That vision does drive the organization. And the thing that I added, vision dies because of a lack of execution. The two things that really kill the vision is, of course, sin and then a lack of execution, right? It's just the sin, the struggle relationally, the sin mentally, the sin in our hearts, right? But then execution. Those are the biggest challenges. Number 9 is that people matter most. How do you develop an environment for success, personal growth, and support? And I would say this, if you don't have an organized plan, this is about people. If you don't have an organized plan for staff development, it's not going to happen. If you do not have an organized plan, and this is about developing people inside the organization. If you don't have a written down, remember I said that earlier, written down developed plan for staff development is just not going to happen. Now, this could hurt your feelings because it hurts my feelings as well because I'm guilty of this. In fact, I'm telling the stories of Chad Rowland and Kelly Whiffen, hey, what at Encounter Church is not organized to you? And I'm going to see if I can beat you to it, right? Give me a month. I'm going to organize everything I can. I'm going to write down everything humanly possible. It actually was so written down, I kind of got bored in year 7. I was like, okay, what do I do now? Like, this thing's organized. What do I do, right? That took 3 years of me digging my teeth into thinking through, I'm going to write down everything. And I didn't write down everything. I missed a lot. Chad said, what about this? I ain't thought about that. Kelly Wolfen, hey, what if this happens? You ever thought about if someone was fired? What would you do if? How would you make sure you? Hey, my buddy's a labor lawyer. I asked him this question. Are you protected if you? The answer was always no. Like, I worked for years on this, right? And it wasn't even close. Now, again, that weights on you, right, about writing things down. The thing about staff development, and I could mention a whole long list of things. Hey, let me ask you a question about your ministry. Tell me about this. Great. Sounds good. Is that written down? Is that understood by all? What's the answer? Often. No. So an action step here. I would really encourage you to say, what are the things that are important to me in my ministry? What are the things that are key and crucial to running this effective ministry? Staff development. That's great. Sounds good. What are you going to do? How are you developing it? Is that written down? I'd call churches. Hey, tell me about you. I heard you guys had a residency. Can you send something to me? You never get an email. You never get a plan because it's not written down. and is not understood by all. So this people matter most, right? People matter. Well, what are you going to do? How are you going to develop? Make sure it's written down. Share about number 9, then maybe transition to the number 10.
I don't know if I have much more to say about number 9. I would say one of the things that is a pet peeve of mine is I'll hear people say all the time, ministry would be great if it wasn't for the people. I would say there's probably something going on there that needs to be addressed, right? We're in the business of people. So if you're at a point where you don't like people, you probably need to get out, right? When this begins feeling like a job, it's time to leave, okay? All right, next. If you don't know the when, then you'll always lose. If you don't know the when, you will always lose. Okay, now you've heard this probably given a whole bunch of different ways. If you don't know what you're, if you don't know the target you're trying to hit, then you'll never hit it. However you want to define that. When I'm talking to my people, one of the things that as a visionary I have realized is that I can frustrate people with a vision that's beyond what they can see. Okay, so oftentimes my wife, I'll just be rambling. We're in the car, going for a long drive, right? And I'm just casting vision to my wife, and she's like, stop. Like, I'm just going to tell you, Kevin, you have outrun all of the people that are attempting to follow you, and you need to turn around and come back, okay? And what she's ultimately telling me is the wind that you're defining is way too far down the road. So this is what I would encourage you guys that are visionaries with. First, make sure that you're defining success and excellence correctly. Okay? And what do I mean by that? Defining success means that we have to celebrate the little wins. As a visionary, we have to see when something transpires that takes us even a half a step toward the vision, celebrate that. Because all of your administrators and all of those people that are doing the smaller things that you don't want to do anyway need to be encouraged that they're actually moving the right direction. If you're not celebrating the small wins, you'll never reach the big one, okay? The second thing I would tell you is when you're defining excellence, be careful that you're defining excellence in this way. It is doing the best you can by the grace of Jesus with what you've been given. Okay? Why this is important is because excellence for your church or your organization may look different than mine. What ends up happening as a visionary is we will often compare what we're seeing in our organization to something that's bigger that we want to get to, and we end up belittling all of the people that are actually working for us. Okay? So if you have Pastor Hat, if you have a worship leader, like right now, I'm developing a new worship leader. He is nowhere near where I want him to be. But excellence for him right now looks different than our previous worship leader, right? So I'm going to celebrate that. Like this, like define excellence different based on what you have and what the Lord has given you, okay?
Can I really put you on the spot?
Yeah, you can.
Okay. This is if I were Kevin's executive pastor and I just heard him say that. You're right. This is not planned, okay? So be gracious. Can you develop a worship leader? I would never say that to you like that. Yeah. This is not, but that's what I'm thinking. Wait. You're developing the worship leaders? Whoa. But you're a visionary. You're there. So you know what I do? I come alongside Kevin. I said, hey, bro, thank you. I said, hey, man, what does that development look like for the worship? What is it you want to see? What is it you really want? What do you... In my mind, I'm like, you developing worship leaders, do you really want to do that? No, he just said it. I said, okay, well, what is it you really want to see? Now, let me say this business of planting, okay? This topic came up. I was like, I don't really like that topic. I like business. I like organization. But here's why we stuck with the title. We wanted to change it. We chose not to. Here's why. Even the word business, what is it? It's literally, it's a function, right? And don't you want your ministry to function and you want it to function and operate well, right? I've mentioned Jethro Moses a few times. That's just one of the examples. How about Acts? Remember a few organizational problems? Like, wait, why are we doing this? We should be doing this, right? So what does it look like to operate and to function well? What does that look like? It really looks like finding the gifts and the talents in your ministry, in your organization, and letting them flourish and getting them out of the way. So you know what I do as an admin? I'd say, hey, Kevin, tell me more about what your heart is for development. Well, I want to see these three things. Great. Just for the worship leaders or for everybody? No, no, no. All the team leaders. Great. Do you have a training on that? No. Can I put one together for you?
Yes, please.
Okay. When do you want that by? Okay, so that's really tough. I can't do that. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to get organized. And I'm going to put together that training and say, hey, what if I trained all of our team leads on this, right? This is the function of accomplishing what that vision is. The last thing I'll say really quick, and we're going to leave the rest of the time for questions, is this. If the vision is too small, you can't accomplish it without the Lord. The vision is too small if you can accomplish it without the Lord. Find people that want to execute the dream that God put in your heart. Find it, dream it, plan it, do it. What else would you say about that last one?
You guys are in this room because you're capable, and that becomes one of our biggest issues. So I have learned over time that I'm a talented guy. I have the ability to network. I can raise support. I can speak eloquently enough to make a difference, and therefore I can do a lot of this business without Jesus. That tells me the vision's too small. If I can do it, it's too small. And I think oftentimes what we do is we end up relying on our own capabilities, talents, instead of saying, Lord, I don't want to be the one that's pushing this. I don't want to do this on my own. It has to be about you. So I guess this is my encouragement to you to say, dream bigger. Because if you can do it, it's too small.
Hey, thank you guys. Yeah. And if you want to clap, that's fine. I know that they aren't hungering for your applause, but what they would appreciate more is just a fist bump afterwards.
If you're like me, this provokes a lot of questions. Here are some that I've written down or been wrestling with. How did you get all these successful business people coming to your church plan? How did you get a developer to rent you a coffee shop for dimes on the dollar that was $54,000 a month? So those are just some of the low-hanging fruit questions I have. Maybe they'll tell you those afterwards. But then some higher-level questions maybe that you were thinking through. I certainly was. Like, how do you assess income, expense, and margin? Like, how do you better assess that? That was something I was thinking through. I was also thinking through what does to the idea of admins don't tell the visionary what he can't do, then what does the administrator get to tell the leaders, and how does that interfacing happen? Maybe that's a question you have. Several things that they shared that I wrote down that I just thought were really powerful. Numbers don't say everything, but they do say something. We can tend as church planters to be so good at being here and answering God's call, and we can see where God wants us to go, but we don't always know how to get there. That was really powerful. I don't know which one of you shared that, but I appreciated you sharing that. And then the vision's too small if you can accomplish it without the Lord. That's something we just keep going back to as a family and a church. So, man, thank you for sharing that. We're saying if you can write the script, then it's not God's script, because we would never be able to write it, right? And so I really am deeply grateful for both of you that you've been practitioners of this. I want to give you three questions and just give you a moment to sit with it, if I can. I want to let you reflect. Here would be one. Like, what did you hear just now? Let's just take 60 seconds. Maybe you just want to star something that you heard, or maybe you even want to write down something that you've heard over the last 45 minutes. All right, second thing, really quickly. Is there anything like that you can put a timeline on? When will you do that?
Mm-hmm. Come on. I like that.
When will you do that? Jason just caught the Holy Spirit and this. And listen, let me do this while Jason's not listening. Even better to that one, who will help you with it? Like, is there somebody you can ask, will you come help me? Or even say to someone, is there someone's name you can write down and say, will you hold me accountable to do? Who will help you with it? Let me just share a personal testimony on that. Like, I'm not the numbers guy. I'm not the trellis guy. I'm not any of that. And we had the opportunity as a church about a couple months ago to hire a guy to help do that, to be the systems guy, the executive director of our church. And we were prepared to offer this amount of money, and we ended up offering a little bit more. And our treasurer goes, can we afford that? And I said, we cannot afford not to do it. And that's the value in this. Like, is it hard? Yes. Is it going to be taxing, exhausting? Yes, but we cannot afford not to think of the church as a business, not primarily, but at least secondarily. So any questions? Can I just give you a second? They're not going to be able to mine into it because we want to honor the dinner time. But any just questions that this provokes for you that you want to ask? Yeah, right.
How do you get people that love money and numbers to be risky? Because as church planners, we're risky and we're not afraid to do that. But like,
yeah,
when you deal with people that love numbers, sometimes they're like a little conservative.
Good. Answer it in 30 seconds or less so we can get as many through this.
They have to see the vision coming to fruition, right? So just those little wins.
Yeah.
Like, I had somebody come to me the other day. They're like, Kevin, the crazy stuff happens around you. And it was a numbers guy. And all I thought was, okay, that's great because I actually showed him that happens.
Good.
So I would say if they're not taking risks, then you're not showing them that the risks you're taking have actually happened.
That's
paid off.
That's good. That's good. Thank you. Any other questions that this provokes that you want to get out?
Yeah, can I have one of those executive ministers?
I'll take off what you want.
Yeah, go ahead.
I really like your question, actually. What does the administrator, what can he tell? Right? Because I'm more of that visionary person. I don't want to be bothered with numbers. It drives me nuts. So I'm just trying to figure out how do I work with that person to move forward.
Yeah. So you have to be a student of the gift and the wiring that God created. And so it really frustrated me when someone called me, hey, what does a good executive pastor do? I don't know how you would respond to that, Justin. It always frustrated me because Justin's a great executive pastor. That's why I looked at him, right? Because they're effectively running a great ministry, right? And I'm like, that's an unfair question. Like, who are you? Who's your pastor? Who does he mean?
I just got to writing some curriculum for his developing his worship leader, so he did some on his shoulders. But he's like, that's great. Other guys said, no, I have a vision. Great. What do you want to do? So I think it's so situational and so contextual to the giftedness of that leader and finding out who they are and what they need. The pastor I work with now at Mission City in Rutland, Vermont, there's a certain way I can ask him questions and pull out something he's like, go for it.
That's good.
I could ask that same question to another person and offend them, you know?
Hey, these guys are going to be here in the next couple of days. In fact, they were told as breakout leaders not to wear their red shirts, but I think Jason said he's going to wear his red shirt tomorrow. So, you know, look for them. If you want to follow up with some questions, I know that they would be really honored to sit down and kind of mine in a little bit longer if you would like to do that.
You did such a good job being on time. Can I say one more thing?
Yeah, go really quick.
I think if I could just beg you and ask you to do this one thing. Look out. And I know you're already doing this. I just want to encourage you. Look out for the incredible uniqueness of every person in your congregation. If God has truly wired them to build the church, to be a part of that, find it. That's number one. If you, to Jason, boil that down, all your passions, that's number one for me. And so when you come to the church, I'm like, who is this? Who's God shaped them to be? Who's God wired them to be? And I find out what they do well, I'm like, ooh. And I know you do that. Don't be scared of being, talking about being risky. Don't be scared of like, hey, can you help me with something? So just be up, that's the eye. So if you want to run an effective ministry and organization, man, God has equipped the body. And they're in your congregation, so go for it.
Hey, sisters and brothers, like we are at the end of our time. Here's what I want to give you a couple of directions on. We're going to move immediately from here to dinner. And so what you're going to do, you're going to go back to that sort of entry room before you went into the main room. That's where dinner is going to be served. And then you can come and grab a place to eat in one of these breakout rooms. So once you get your food from that main sort of lobby before we go into the worship room, get your food there and then just kind of follow the crowd. Get with your crew that you want to spend time with. After you finish with dinner, you're free for the night. So go and have that. That's the last thing this evening. So go and have an amazing night. Be on time for things starting tomorrow. There'll be things that God wants to say to our hearts, our minds, and our souls that we don't want to miss. And I appreciate you being in here and your attentiveness. I know that these guys do as well. Like, I would just encourage you to, as if you're not a nuts and bolts person, like, start a note on your phone that makes a list of these things, and even the small things. Like, as a NAM person, like, get your SBC ID, work on your 501c3, make sure that you're keeping proper financial records. Like, these are low-level business things, but these can be the things that trip us up and help us not to operate for the sake of Jesus. So let me pray, and then you guys hit the dinner. Thank you for being here. God, we bless you for what we've heard. I thank you for Jason and Kevin, who are practitioners of this. I thank you for their integrity. Lord, I pray for them as they follow you, for Rachel and Christy, their children, the congregations and ministries that they get to lead. God, would you bless them for giving their time and energy in preparing this? Thank you for everyone who's heard something. Holy Spirit, we entrust what we've heard to you to help us to be doers of the things and not just hearers. Give us a sense of discernment. And God, bring the people around us that we're going to need to do things well. God, we're not trying to turn the church into a business. But God, every one of us in here would agree that whatever the maximum thing that you can squeeze out of our lives and ministries, God, we want all of it. Lord, we want everything. So thank you for what we've heard today. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
Thank you guys for being here. You're just